Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Impart, Inspire, Influence, and Impact with Infinitely More Life. I am your host, Era Jackson, and we are so glad that you have tuned in with us. We are going to be joined today by Carrie Reichardt. Carrie is a phenomenal speaker, an Amazon number one best-selling author, and she's going to talk to us today. This is week number four of our seven-week series, Mind Control, Shift Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. And Carrie is going to talk about finding freedom. And where do you find it? Do you own your story or does it own you? Now, she is the founder of Infinitely More Life, as well as Mercy's Lake Family in Mombasa, Kenya. She is a speaker and a coach. She is a lawyer. And the most important thing, she is one of my absolutely very, very best friends. And we always joke that we look a lot alike, even though we are sisters from another mister. So I want to ask all of you right now, how do you feel, especially in this year of 2020? Are you feeling stuck? Are you feeling anxious? Do you have a lot of worry? Are you just going through the motions of life, kind of zombie-like, in a brain fog? Well, I'll tell you what. Social science researcher, Dr. Brené Brown, let me tell you what she says here. She says that when we defy, deny, or ignore our story, it often defines us. But if we own it, we can rewrite the ending. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about today. We don't want to go back and visit those places to camp out, hang out, you know, have a bonfire. We want to go and take control. We want to go back and release the emotions over those situations and take ownership back from those emotions. Carrie, talk to me today. What's going on? How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm so excited to be with you and all the listeners and the viewers here today. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, you have a book out, one of many, but the one that we're really going to break down a little bit today is called Trauma to Triumph. I Just Want My Life Back. That's a story in and of itself, because you did not have a life that you could call your own for a long, long time. What Bible verses prompted you to do this book and other things? What inspired you on this topic?
Absolutely. I think my biggest inspiration from the Bible for all the work, both here with Infinitely More and also with the work that we do in Kenya and writing, really all of my writing that I do is all based on Isaiah 61, the first few verses 1-3, especially, but it talks about binding up the brokenhearted. And like you referenced, really 30 years of my life was not my life. Like I was just living out of fear, living just habit, like just trying to micromanage, control whatever I needed to do to get through that day, thinking that's however, but yet then learning, you know, from there that it wasn't. And so that's probably the biggest Bible verse. But another one, more of a Bible story that really relates for me when I talk about emotions and when I talk about like handling my emotions before they handle me, create my life, that I handle them before they create my life, is in 1 Samuel, and especially chapter 9. And that's when Saul is appointed, or is about to be appointed, as the first king of Israel. It should be an amazing, exciting time, like super excited, you know, just like stepping into that, like, oh, this is gonna be fun. He chose me. This is so awesome. Just like he chose me. But we find Saul hiding in the baggage. Tells that to Samuel, and he's over there hiding the baggage. And, you know, that looks like maybe humility. Of course, as we know through Saul's life, like that was not necessarily true humility, or he grew out of that humility very quickly. In the end, those emotions that he didn't deal with, he was fearful, he was whatever else he was, he didn't deal with those emotions. And so then he ends up hiding in the baggage. And I don't want anyone to have to hide in the baggage anymore. Yeah. I in my baggage for so long, and I don't want anyone to have to do that. And so that's really the inspiration of Infinitely More Life, and also Mercy's Life Family over in Kenya.
Oh my gosh, that's a story. So what does baggage look like besides humility? And the not so positive things of fear, worry, anxiety. It can also look like pride, arrogance, conceitedness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and remember, pride can look both ways. It can look like we normally think of pride, like, oh, I'm so awesome, you know, and that kind of thing. But pride is also, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. Never good enough. Everyone hates me. You know, all of that is pride too, because it's all about you. Yeah. The middle finger in pride is I. So whether it's I and I'm awesome, or I and I'm not good enough and I'm horrible, and you're saying that Jesus's death on the cross wasn't enough for you. Mm. It wasn't for everyone else, but not you. Mm. So pretty very subtle, you know, in ways that we don't think. And I definitely can fall into that side of pride for sure. I hope not the other, but at the same time, that other side of, you know, not good enough, or, and it's the thoughts that play in our head that give us that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Tell me about your story. Well, I know it, but tell our viewers and listeners about your story, because you've come a long, long way, and I'm so proud of you. Tell me about your journey.
Oh gosh, there's one more Bible verse I want to reference quickly, because it really kind of launch into that, and I forgot it. I just peeked at my notes, but Hebrews 12 verses 1 and I think it's just verse 1, actually. I don't have my Bible with me, near me, but it talks about letting go of the sin that holds us to move forward in life, that we're running a race, and that we need to let go of the sins that entangle us, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we think of that as sins like that we do, and sometimes they are sins that we do. You know, it might be drinking, it might be, you know, sex in inappropriate ways or whatever. It could be a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Letting emotions dictate versus letting God dictate. But it also can be sins that have been done to us. And that kind of goes into my story. And we need to offer forgiveness for that, not for the other people, mm-hmm. but for us. And that's where that idea, we need to own our story so we can rewrite the endings, like Brené Brown says, right? Like if we write and have the life that God has died to give us, that Jesus has died to give us, we're going to need to let go. And that includes, like for my story, you know, rape and sexual abuse and divorce and betrayal in different situations and so many different things. And so abortion, another one of those things, like so many things that we need to let go of. We need to go and seek repentance. We need to go and seek forgiveness so then we can also be willing to forgive. Mm-hmm. We don't have to forgive. We need to be willing to forgive, and then Jesus will take the rest from there. But we can't sit there and say, well, they did something that was so bad, you know, like rape and sexual abuse, something like that. Yes, that's so bad. But if I'm going to live in that the rest of my life, then I'm going to live in that.
Right.
And I don't want to live in that. I want to live in what Jesus died to give me. So I want to let that go out of my life. Doesn't excuse the behavior. And it doesn't mean we don't, you know, press charges if that's something that, you know, that is available and possible for you. Doesn't mean any of that. It just means that I live in that every single day and every single minute in my thoughts and in my mind and in my actions.
Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between being a doormat and just letting things happen with no repercussions and giving the control to God and letting him do what he says in his word, that vengeance is his, and let him deal with it.
Absolutely.
And if that means you start the process by pressing those charges and whatever have you, then come what may to those that persecute you. And the word also tells us that woe is he that does cause harm to one of God's children, because the wrath of God is going to come down. He's not an angry God, but you just don't mess with his kids. And we're parents. We know that. You don't mess with our kids, right? Yeah. So how did that all affect you, everything you went through? How did that affect your mind? How did that make you feel from a confidence perspective, self-esteem?
Oh gosh, fear, everything. Like, so to the point that when I was a child, like I wouldn't even speak. Like I wouldn't in class, I wouldn't speak to even to teachers. I would muddle and whisper and kind of look away. Like it was like so pervasive. And then when I got older, like just friendships, it was really just being a chameleon to whoever I was with, like whatever their likes and where were my likes and wants. Like I didn't have an identity of my own. Okay. It was whoever I was with. Hmm. I needed to just conform, just to be accepted, because I felt so abandoned, rejected, alone, and, you know, and all those things.
And you allowed the words spoken to you and the actions done to you to take over and control you. Is that what I'm understanding?
Absolutely.
And you lived in those words.
Absolutely. And this book talks about that, you know, some of the specifics of that, you know, the idea of what they said to me became my truth, became what I began, that what I then started repeating to myself minutely, daily, you know, monthly, yearly, you know, and that led to more and more shyness. I'm sure, you know, depression in some level, though it wasn't very, you know, I did well in school, like good enough and didn't try very hard. I was in sports, you know, and things like that, but it was just, it was not, there wasn't connection. Like I was just there to, person next to me, you know, like, you know, that kind of thing. It was very, just all fear-based, all fear.
Yeah. And I know, that's going back to what we were saying about just going through the motions at the beginning in that zombie-like state. And, speaking of sports, I know you're a gymnast many, many years. And I know that that wasn't even joyful to you. You did it for your mom. Again, that, satisfying someone else.
Absolutely. Right? Was so much fear in the gym, and you see that probably on television shows these days anyway, documentaries of what it looks like in a gym. And I wasn't a high level gymnast. I was maybe you'd consider a middle level gymnast, but I was there 4 or 5 days a week, and you know, it was not about oh good job. It was very much, you know, slapping the leg if it was bent, and you know, like get up and do, you know, whatever 50 of the thing you're so afraid of, and I hated it. Like I would fake headaches, I would fake like anything to try and get out of it. And you know, my mom was not,
I know,
which I'm grateful for now. I don't give up easy, you know, we know that through,
no, you don't.
But in the moment, like it was like, and I don't, she claims, and maybe this is true, like I never even told her I didn't like it, and that could be true. I'm not saying
it could be true, because you didn't want to disappoint, you didn't want to upset, you didn't want to, yeah, you didn't want to be anything but what someone else wanted you to be.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So interesting. We're going to take a quick little break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation on the other side. All right, everyone. Welcome back. And thank you for staying with me over the little commercial break there, Carrie. I want to talk about how we talked about how your voice was stolen, how you wouldn't speak in, as a child and things like that. And I really wonder how many of our listeners and viewers can relate to these things, you know, just to be timid and to be quiet. You know, a lot of times children grow up in households where they're to be seen and not heard, right? But as an adult, that is not good either.
Absolutely. I mean, part of that, you know, the book really references like how my voice was stolen, my body was stolen, my mind was stolen, you know, all these, my soul, you know, all of those things. And the book outlines the details of that, but it's so true. You know, the hiding of that secret, the fear that else would find out, and what then would happen to my family, or, you know, 'cause it was extended family members that were a part of this. It was not my nuclear family. And so, you know, that fear of wanting to protect them, and you know, what would happen if they found out. And so then it was just into that silence and just living in the fear that someone might find out, and it better not be from me. And even if they did, you know, what would happen? Would they believe me? Because of course, you know, the people told me that no one would believe you, and you know, all those. And so, yeah, like my soul was stolen, like just the hiding of those secrets. And it might be a situation of an alcoholic parent, or, I mean, there's so many different situations that can lead to these same things. And then life, that's not what God has provided for us, but instead, you know, this lower level life, that if we even call it a life, it's a going through the motion. It's a, you know, it's depression, it's anxiety. And those are things I struggle with anyway, now on this walk with God. But at the same time, like, it's just, it's not the same now for me, because at least I know where to turn. I may not choose that, but I know it's news. And though I grew up in church, it wasn't something that I would go to for help. It was just like, you show up every Sunday, you do your thing, and you go home and you live life. Like, you're not reading the Bible, you're not living any different way than anyone else. It's a thing to check off the list, right? Like, I went to church, what Christians do. And not until I was 33 did I realize that, and even after that, really, that it actually is a lot different than that. It's about a relationship. It's not about showing up at a building. Not that that's not important. The building is important to recharge me, but that is a recharge. It's the rest of my life that shows that I'm a Christian.
Right. That the community of the congregating is what that's all about. So you hid. You had your own dark secret places that you hid things deep down inside, compartmentalized. And how did you overcome that?
You know, how I overcame it when I was younger, you know, in my later teenage years, when I remembered some of the abuse and it was like, what's going on? It was just a lot of fear and a lot of just not knowing how to deal, and then sharing it with one person, but that person being, you know, they're my same age and not knowing how to handle that. It didn't go well. We were at a party, so that didn't help. So that was one way I dealt with it, was partying. For sure. And then it would reveal itself in my relationship choices. I was in one really, really abusive relationship in a way, physically, emotionally, sexually, like just every way. It was mentally, it was just controlled. And, you know, and it was, I mean, really, it was my fault. Like, I got myself in that relationship and I stated it, you know, like, you know, he did what he did, but if I had been emotionally healthy, if I had my thoughts up, I would have been able to leave. I would have left. And so that idea, and then that resulted in pregnancy, which led to an abortion. And one of the reasons I do the work that we do in Kenya, and so many other things as well, because it was a huge decision maker in a lot of my relationships. You know, from there, you know, even my marriage partner, my first marriage, didn't end well, obviously, because it was divorced. Mm-hmm. There was infidelity with a close friend of mine, you know, within that as well. Like, it was a mess. There was a lot of alcohol and possibly other drugs. I don't know. After, there was definitely other drugs after our divorce. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it led to horrible, horrible, horrible decisions as far as relationships. Like, just not having a guide at all. Like, just nothing. Yes. Like, it was a mess.
Wow. So when you were experiencing all of these things over the years and you were feeling no self-esteem, no confidence, anxiety, worry, fear, was there ever any feeling of disgust? Like, I'm disgusting type of thing.
Yeah. In fact, let me read a little chunk of this, I think it's chapter 5. Okay. On that talks about that part, because it's something I probably can't even word as well as I did here. As shame was building bigger and bigger in the pit of my stomach, the shame's voice was ringing louder and louder in my head. It led to strong feelings. Disgust is not a word that I normally associate with its own category of emotion. Some of the symptoms are disapproval of who I was, disappointment in me and my choices, my perception that everyone thought I was awful, avoidance of everyone. Many of these words were exactly what my attackers used directly to me. You had better believe that these words summed up who I thought I was as a person. I was disgusting.
My goodness. How do you feel reading that?
It definitely brings me back to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then I think of Christ, and he died for that.
Right, to wipe that away. Yeah. You know, I wonder how many of our listeners and viewers heard those words and have had those same words spoken over them, and they live in that and they repeat it to themselves, because we all know that self-talk is very, very important, and where our thoughts go and our minds go, our actions lead to the same actions. So in those feelings of anxiety and disgust, besides the partying and things like that, what did you turn to? And what I'm specifically referring to here is the opposite for you was the overachievements, the overcompensations. Talk about that.
Yeah, I would say there was two other things besides the partying was micromanaging and controlling, which I did my marriage for sure with the alcohol and just wanting to feel in control, and with my history. So it wasn't just the alcohol. I mean, part of that was my history to the choice of that person to want then micromanage. control. And then, yeah, overachievement. So it was just like, I never wanted to be in the like abusive type situation again. So I wanted to be the smartest person in the room. I wanted to be able to handle myself. I didn't want to have to rely on anyone else. Like, I was just going to take care of it. Whatever it was, I would take care of it. And so I finished undergrad. I had a son in undergrad, got married shortly after that. Then didn't really have any plans. So I went to law school, ended up getting into law school. I'm not sure how, because I really didn't have the grades to get in, but somehow I got into law school and then was a practicing lawyer for, I guess it was like 8, 9, 10 years. And then also doing some work now as far as nonprofits and stuff. But again, that idea of just, if I just do enough, it was like going back to my church life, I felt like what I heard in church was, if I do enough good things, you know, there's a scale here, right? And if I do enough good things, then I'll get into heaven. If I do too many bad things, then I won't. Like, it was this decision that would be made when I died, and it was at heaven, you know, at the gates, and that, you know, then Jesus would decide whether or not, or whoever, I guess, I don't know, would decide whether I did enough good things or more bad things, and that was the weight that was going to decide if I was going to go to heaven or not. I'm not saying that's what the church was saying. I don't remember, but that's what I heard.
Right.
And so it was overachievement. Let me just keep trying and try harder and try longer and just be better and make up for those things. And, you know, just all of this, like, just trying to control it is really what that comes to. And so I definitely turned to that micromanaging and controlling, definitely turned to achievement. And it's something I revert back to even now at times, you know, and just tasks versus pushing into God's word and getting that for healing versus getting more accomplished.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that it doesn't matter what achievements and tasks we have, we're already enough and we're already empowered and forgiven and all of those things that Jesus died on the cross for. I'm going to go back and challenge you on your getting into law school. You said, I don't know how I did it. So we all know hindsight is 20/20. And the moment you said that, the instant thing that came to my mind, and I had to write it down quickly, was you were meant to go to law school because, and you got in by God's grace and favor because it was the setup for you to do what you do today, because you couldn't do the things you do today legally, even in Kenya, if you didn't have somewhat of a background in a system, a legal system. So it wasn't, even though it was a great achievement and things went the way they were, it wasn't where you were meant to stay. But it was a tool that God gave you so that he could use you as the vessel he does.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree with that. And as I look at that, I was not a follower of Christ at that time. From, you know, when I got confirmed in my church until I was 33, like, I didn't set foot in a church. So no relationship, like I shared, you know, what I thought about that. Not a place. Oh, so I had no relationship yet. I can look back, we can look back and see, you know, God's work in our lives, even in the mess, you know, and then he uses those messes to become our, to share with other people that are suffering and going through those same things. And so that's, you know, where the whole idea of owning our stories, when we own our stories, then we can help other people through the same thing. And it's not, you know, dictating our lives.
It's so interesting because we all, I think a lot of people are in the same situation. I grew up in a church too. And for a long time after I became old enough, did not go to church until 10 years ago, maybe, or something like that. And it looks very different too. Like you said, it's not about checking it off on the box on Sunday morning. It's the relationship. And it's so interesting that even in that time where we didn't have relationships with God and with Jesus, we still accomplished things because they had a relationship with us. They were waiting for us. They've always been in relationship with us. They've been waiting for us to come back and say, you know what, I'm here.
I love that so much because one of my favorite phrases is, you're not alone, right?
Ever.
Like, in this together, you're not alone. And so that idea that, you know, we're not, like, we're never alone because Jesus is with us if we accept him. You know, if we don't want to accept him for whatever reason, we think we can do it better, or we don't think we need him, like, we're not bad enough to need him. Like, I didn't do this or I didn't do that, so then I don't really need him. I'll just handle it myself, which is my life motto. Like, that's like model for more years than it has it. Man, I'm telling you, like, jump in, because it is so much more freeing. Yes, mm-hmm. I still struggle with anxiety at times. Yes, I still struggle with stuff. But yet it's like, I know where the answer is going to come, you know, as opposed to the next Oprah show or reading the right book or going to a seminar or doing whatever it is I think I have to do to have this feeling, or having my crystals, or, you know, whatever it is that we think we need to have that feeling. Like, now I know, like, it's none of that. It is not a law degree, and it's not crystals, and it's not Oprah show, and it's not a book other than the Bible. The Bible will bring that peace to me, you know, and that's God's word, and that's Jesus, and it's done for all of us. It's a matter of whether we choose that or not. And I hope people do. I hope people do, because it is such a just more grace-filled and joyful life than before.
Yeah, and you know, we're in the thick of this series. You're week number 4 of this 7-week series about mind control, about mind renewal, about changing your thoughts and shifting your life. And I can look back, and I think I challenge everyone within the sound of my voice. I challenge everyone to go back and look at different points of your life when you thought that there was no way for something to happen, and a way happened. That's God. You know, if we think back on those little small God moments, like, you know, I'm not sure how my kids are going to eat today. And then you suddenly find $20 in your pocket and you go to the store. That's God. You know, you took the long way home from work, or you got delayed at work, and then, you know, you go through your normal driveway pattern, whatever your commute, your route, and there was an accident maybe 10 minutes earlier, and you're seeing the after effect of it on the side of the road. That could have been you, you know. So we just need to look back and see God in the everyday small moments. Yes, he does big grandiose things, but he is way more subtle than people think.
Wow, that is so true. Like, you know the stuff we're doing in Kenya, and most people probably do, or you can go to mercieslighttofindthatout.org to find it out. And it's big things. Like, I mean, they're amazing things, but it's not because I've done big things. Mm-hmm. Like I've shared with you, like, for the most part, I sat in this living room on my couch and just prayed.
Yeah.
And then he put the right people in place, and all of a sudden here. Like, it's about the little things. It's about obeying what he calls us to do. And it's very rarely a big thing. It's like, love your husband like the Bible says to love your husband.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, but it is. The idea is simple, and it's there, and it's clear how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, forgiveness is in the Bible. Am I doing that?
Right.
You know, loving my neighbor, you know, these things. Like, it's very clear what our purpose is in the Bible. And as we start living that purpose, whatever it says in there, loving our neighbor, forgiving others, loving our kids the way he says to love our kids, loving our husbands, and getting our priorities in order, you know, then he'll build those things up to whatever the next purpose is. But yeah, we definitely need to go back and uncover, you know, and get healing in these areas of emotions, or we can't live any of that. We can't love others if we can't let God's love in.
And that's so interesting. I referred to this parable with another one of our guests, and it's the parable of the talents. You know, the more you are productive and you steward well over what he's already given you, he'll give you more. And so if you're not doing those priority things well, he won't give you more.
Yeah, and that's in the concept of, you know, what he's calling in his word. You know, it's just so, you know, that has to be the basis. I mean, that's the basis of all that our employees do in Kenya. I had they weren't willing to take their days off because they wanted to work, you know, with the girls, and they were so dedicated, and I'm so grateful for that. Right. But God's word says we have to rest. And so we did a phone call this week to say, like, hey, thank you, you know, because during COVID they couldn't leave, and we're so grateful, but also we need to live our lives. You know, I had the Bible, you know, in front of me, like, by what this says, and it says we need to rest. So it's hard for me too. I don't like it. But I know I have to if I want to stay, you know, in his will. And I think it's so hard here in the U.S. especially, and in the Western world, to take rest, because we just want to work harder, longer, faster, and to take time to go back and evaluate our lives and our emotions and, you know, circumstances in our lives. Like, oh, we don't have time for that. But I'm telling you, you're losing a ton of time, relationship, time of making up money-wise in your business, you know, or mm-hmm. even employee, you know, you could have risen to the ranks faster because you've got reactions to certain circumstances, which then mm-hmm. held you down. I mean, there's just so many things, you know, that in your relationships, your wealth and just life, you know, and friendships and things like that as well, that are keeping you stuck and wasting so much more time mm-hmm. than yeah. you would digging in. And then all of those areas are going to be so much better. And I speak from experience because that's where I've gotten it from, was from
well, this. I'll be honest with you too. It's a societal thing as well in the U.S., especially the Western world, but particularly in the U.S., unlike European countries and things of that, where it's designed in their culture for them to take their holidays and rest for 30 days at a time, 2 weeks at a time. That's not unusual. The Western world, the U.S., is all about go, 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 achieve the next thing, be the greatest, be the top, number one. You're underachieving, even though you have a gold medal in four sports, whatever, you know, type of thing. We're going to take a quick little commercial break here. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. But when we come back, I want you to tell me when you were in the hospital with that pulmonary embolism, that blood clot, and how that affected you and where the tide turned from there. Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. We'll be right back. Thanks so much.